Welcome to another edition of Clock End Talk Podcast, the podcast for Arsenal fans all over the world, and I'm waffling already because I'm in a rush to get off the podcast. Happy Christmas, Tony. Happy Christmas, Liam.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you and all of our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Merry Christmas.
Those of you who had enough a winless Christmas, this has been the worst Christmas ever for Arsenal. Did you know it's the first year we have ever started in the bottom half on Boxing Day?
I think they said on Match of the Day yesterday it was like 1984, I think it was the last time it was in the bottom half.
I guess, yeah, it's Premier League, isn't it? Yeah. My biggest hate when people don't think there was any football before the Premier League started. But there was. So it must have been the stat I heard, that it was the first time we'd been in the bottom half since the launch of the Premier League. And we still didn't win. Anyway, I wasn't here last week, nor were you on the last pod, Liam. Mikel Arteta has been appointed in that time. Now, Tony, I was listening to your podcast while I was cooking in preparation for this party this afternoon. I mean, I think it's fair to say that if I could, you were anyone but Emery. So Arteta is anyone but Emery, and he had a great press conference. So you're relatively happy?
Yeah, very happy. As I said, I wanted someone that was just going to be tough on the players. And I wasn't sure pre-appointment if he was going to be that guy, but he said everything right so far. So, yeah, as of now, very happy with it.
And Liam, what about you, mate? Welcome again back to the podcast. Really good debut last time, I must say.
Thank you.
Arteta, for you, what's your feelings now?
I was excited before it, but I think I'm even more excited since that press conference. It's like he just sort of gets it. He understands, he knows what we want to hear, but it's a case of now as well seeing it put into action, which I think we might have just seen the first signs of yesterday.
What, with a 1-1 draw against the bottom four Bournemouth? Okay. See, look, I find myself, you know I'm the positive Arsenal fan, but when you're all being so positive about signing someone who's got no experience because he talked well at a press conference, I'm going to have to play devil's advocate and start slagging him off a bit, I'm sure. But for me, Arteta, you know how I felt? I thought it was a strange appointment to appoint someone at a club like Arsenal. Such an important appointment, because we've had 18 months of failure, and we're getting worse rather than better. So for me, it was a strange appointment, but I am an Arsenal fan and I will back him 100%. And I will agree that his press conference, the one criticism that a lot of us were concerned about was in recruiting someone who's got absolutely no experience whatsoever. And he covered that, didn't he, straight away? What do you say to the people who say you've got no experience? And he says, well, I can't help. I haven't got any. and it sort of was right. At least he understands. At least he understands where a lot of the fans are coming from. So we saw yesterday his first team selection. We're away from home, crippled really with injuries down the flanks. You know, Bellerin out, Chamber suspended, Kolasinac injured, Tierney injured. So apart from those, Tony, what did you make of his first team selection?
Yeah, I mean, when you mentioned the injuries, you didn't mention Martinelli, which I think would have made a big difference in his selection. The only thing that raised eyebrows for me was Nelson, and I imagine a lot of people are the same. Everything else, I think, as you said, with the injuries and suspensions, I think the rest of the team pretty much picked itself. We wasn't sure with Ozil, again, more attitude than ability, if Arteta would take to him or if he would be... Obviously, we didn't know how Arteta was going to play, and I guess a lot of people imagine we was going to be a high-pressing team, which doesn't particularly suit Ozil. But, yeah, as I said, for me, the only one that raised eyebrows was Nelson, because I thought he was okay against Everton, but a lot of people thought he was bad. So I guess they would have been surprised to see him given another chance.
What about you, Liam? First impressions of his first team?
Yeah, I mean, Nelson was the surprise inclusion. And I think after listening to Tony and everybody last week, I looked a bit more at Nelson's day, and I sort of noticed his all-round game was a lot better than I thought it was against Everton. I thought Lacazette was a surprise as well. I wasn't expecting him to start away from home. Maybe if it was a home game, it would be different. But away from home, I thought he might stick with Aubameyang and a normal left winger at left wing, if he could find one somewhere.
Just to butt in, this is why I said Martinelli was a key injury, because I think Aubameyang would have played central if Martinelli was fit. But you think, because they've got to use Saka at left back, they're literally, and Martinelli's injured, there is literally no one else to play on the left, which I, for me, that's the reason Lacazette played.
Yeah. I sort of expected, sorry to butt in as well, I sort of expected Nelson to play left wing and Pepe on the right. I'm sure we'll get on to Pepe a bit later, but couldn't work out why he was again on the bench.
Well, I was going to say, why I get onto it later, unless there's questions, which I haven't seen, unfortunately, today. Why isn't Pepe playing? He didn't play under Lundberg, he didn't play under very much under Emery, and now we've got a third coach in the space of 2 years who doesn't fancy him starting. And yet, for me, he's such an exciting player, and that would have just, you know, you're playing your best players in this sort of this game, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, the only well, there's a couple of reasons I can think of, and it doesn't mean they're right. Is one is he carrying niggling injuries and he's struggling to adjust, and a lot of players say that in their first year that they're always carrying an injury and it takes them a while to get used to it. Obviously, we've including that, we've got 3 games in 6 days. Did he think that the Chelsea game was more important and we could win against Bournemouth without him and you'd use him for Chelsea and United? Who knows? I mean, it seems clear to pretty much all fans that we look a lot brighter when he's on the pitch, and he always looks like he can do something. Beats men, gets people off their seats.
Is it just because... Sorry to cut over. Is it, Liam, is it just because... You know, we've got Ainsley Maitland-Niles on the right-hand side and Nelson is going to work harder and track back more. You know, is it just because of the weakness? And do you think maybe if Bellerin was playing and was flying, that he might have played Pepe to start?
Well, perhaps, but I think Maitland-Niles and Pepe have made quite a good partnership when they have played together. I think it's probably more that Ozil plays and he doesn't feel we can play Ozil and Pepe, two guys that won't do so much defensive work. Maybe he feels he can afford one, but not both. That was my suspicion.
It just seemed a bit... I mean, it looked like he'd packed the team down the core with experience. I mean, Leno's the only goalkeeper, but then you've got Socrates and Luis, are the most experienced players, and Torreira and Xhaka, again, the most experienced players. There's no room for Guendouzi, Willock in that team. Lacazette, Aubameyang, Ozil. You know, that's your core going through the middle, pretty much, with Aubameyang maybe slightly on the left. To cover for the inexperience of Maitland-Niles, Saka, Nelson. Am I reading that right, Tone?
I don't know, because I don't know if he had too much of a choice. I mean, you start, obviously Leno's an obvious choice, but you started with the centre-backs, and they were the two that were available, really. I mean, Mustafi and Mavropanos aren't going to start unless something drastic happens. Chambers and Holding are injured, so he's gone with the two most experienced, but it's not... I don't think there was an inexperienced option except Mavropanos, who, let's be honest, he's just not going to get in. Xhaka and Torreira, I think most fans, unless they've got their I hate Xhaka mode, which seems to be on at most times, would argue that that's our best pairing. I'm not saying they're the best players, but they're the best pairing. Ozil's always going to be a bit of an enigma. You never know if a manager's going to take to him or not. And as I said, I believe Lacazette only started because Martinelli was injured and we had no other left winger.
No. I mean, let's just quickly review the game. In fairness, when you see that I wrote it down here somewhere, let's have a look. When I looked at the highlights of that Arsenal put on, and I literally only watched them 10 minutes before we started, there was 5 minutes 35 seconds of highlights of the game. That's not the bite-size one, that's the highlights of the game, and that includes a minute talking about the team selection. So it wasn't much of a game, really, was it?
It's another one. I don't know. I said the same when I came out of Everton. It didn't feel like a bad game, and it felt like there was a little bit happening. And I got out and looked on social media and Match of the Day and whatnot, and everyone hammered it, saying it was the worst game of the year. And I watched the highlights, and it did look terrible. Yesterday, there was more happened than there did in the Everton game for sure. I don't know. I think I was just so excited by what I was seeing in terms of systems and the way we was doing things. The quality of the game didn't really register too much. I mean, I feel like we should have won it. But clear-cut chances. I mean, I think we had 2 shots on target. One was the goal and the other one was Joe Willock's attempted back pass.
Yeah. All right, so let me put it to Liam in another way then. So, Liam, I was at Everton and I'm a little bit with Tony. I didn't come away from that game thinking it was terrible, except I had a girl over from who's staying with us, who's over from Brazil, and I took her to. I wanted to take her to an English game, and it happened to get tickets. Thank you, Tony, for Goodison Park, and she really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed it because it was great atmosphere. There was a lot of singing. as Tony mentioned in the podcast last week, there was quite a lot of hard tackles, which always lifts you as a supporter. But at the end of the day, I think there was one shot. So was yesterday any better than Everton, or was it exactly the same as Everton, except we did things a lot quicker?
Having watched both games on the TV, I actually enjoyed the Bournemouth game a lot more. There might have been caveated by Arteta's first game and the excitement surrounding that. But I thought the overall play was pretty decent, but we were lacking chances because the final ball was just utterly dreadful all game. But besides that, I thought it was actually quite an enjoyable enough game, actually.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly review the game. I think I noticed, I think we were in the first 10 minutes when we had our first really good chance where Saka gets to the byline and then just puts a terrible shot come crossover with four Arsenal players running in at the middle to the back post. We score that, I think we win the game comfortably.
Yeah, I agree. I think if we got the first goal, however it happened, we'd have won the game comfortably. It was a case of all game, just that final ball was always missing. And I don't want to beat anyone with a stick because I thought everyone's overall game was quite good. But for whatever reason, we just couldn't find the final killer ball or the, and it restricted us to these half chances that we couldn't really score from.
Yeah, right. I'm going to slightly disagree there. I think our final ball from wide areas was poor. I think going through the middle, it wasn't. The issue is with Bournemouth, if for anyone who's ever been there, it's super windy at all times and it's a really narrow pitch. Everyone really struggles to cross the ball there. And I'm not defending. I'm going to dig out Nelson and Saka here. Their crossing was horrendous all game. But it is notoriously a very difficult place to cross the football. But I thought through the middle, I mean, obviously, we're going to get onto the big chances later, but there was a few times Ozil slid people in, Luiz slid people in. I thought going through the middle, our final ball wasn't bad, and I thought we had some bad misses. Well, let's be honest, I thought Lacazette had some bad misses yesterday. Some of them may only have been half chances, but where you're not really working the keeper. Willock's miss, again, passing the ball through the middle of the pitch. And yes, it's a shot on target, but let's be honest, he's not really worked the keeper. So I'd say when we got into wide areas, our delivery was bad, but I've seen a lot saying our final ball was terrible, and I really don't think it was, and that's having been there and then seen the highlights after.
Now, I heard Arteta, I heard the start of his press conference. He talked, obviously, we'll get on to Ozil, I'm sure. The Willock chance you're talking about, is that the one right at the end? Is that where he's sort of, you know, we're going to win the game? I think it was into injury time, wasn't it? And he just...
Yeah, 91st minute, and he could have slid Aubameyang or Pepe in. The shot was probably the wrong option, but then still having taken the shot, it was a terrible effort at a shot.
But we had options either end. But the point I was making about Arteta is that he said how pleased he was with the attitude of the players when we conceded. Now, we conceded, we'll get onto that goal, I suppose. But I thought that, you know, when we conceded, a bit like we have against Manchester City, the heads did drop. And until half time, when we got going again, there was that fear that Bournemouth could go on and score two or three. Tony, did it feel like that at a game, or did you think there was an instant reaction to come back?
I'd say somewhere in between. I think we got a little bit nervous and a little bit worse, but I wouldn't. I mean, we've all seen Arsenal head drops when we just absolutely fall apart. I didn't feel like that. It just felt like they were sort of a bit more protective. Like we can't go 2-0 down. Rather than where, as I said, we've seen us implode loads of times, and it wasn't like that. But there was a little bit of nervousness, and they started forcing the ball a little bit more instead of just playing around with it. And I think it hurt us more that the goal came from a mistake from playing out from the back, because then the next time they've done it, they're a bit more unsure. I'll be honest, again, our fans didn't help by moaning, well, some people moaning every time Leno didn't boot the ball 90 yards. So there was a bit of everything involved, but I don't think it was a completely like heads have gone like we've seen many, 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 many times before.
I think with the comment you make on Leno, what I think is frustrating for those sitting at home and those in the crowd is the look of indecision on his face. It's not like he's comfortable, right, I'm looking around, right, all go up, I'm going to kick it long. It's like it seems to interminable amount of time that he takes to make that decision, and we get nervous and anxious. I mean, Liam, you said you were enjoying the difference, you're enjoying, you know, the game a lot more than you did the Everton game. when we were playing out from the back, then Saka makes a mistake, the sort of mistake that if he's playing on the left wing isn't punished, but the sort of mistake that when he's playing at left back is. You know, where are you on us playing out from the back?
I thought we actually did it quite well yesterday, with the one exception of the goal. It starts with Leno and that indecision you guys are talking about, and he just sort of hits it rather hard to Luiz, who's not standing that far away from him, who actually does quite well to give it to Saka, and then he loses the ball and they break. I thought besides that, we did it relatively well, actually. I mean, they didn't press us too intensely, but we managed to break the lines quite well, I thought. Better than we have done previously, at least. Not that we've got a high bar to work with.
Well, Tony, let me say this to you. The goal then, all right, Saka makes the mistake, they put a cross in and they score a goal. We had chances in the first half. You know, I think it was that, there was that time where we had three shots that were blocked, you know, three consecutive shots, a bit of a scramble. Bournemouth players throwing their bodies in the way. The cross comes in for their goal. There was four Arsenal players surrounding the one player who scores it, plus their goalkeeper. Why do these just keep going in against us? Is it, you know, we've blamed Emery, we've blamed Lundberg, do we blame Arteta? Do we blame the players? Why don't we seem to ever, you know, we seem to have let in a lot of goals like that this year?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, at the ground, the Arsenal fans are sort of where our right back should be. So I'm the other side to the action, like that end, but the other end to it. And to be honest, I didn't see Gosling coming in, and I just thought, oh, Socrates is going to clear this, and then it was a goal. Obviously, watched it back. I don't know why. It's difficult because I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know why he didn't go to ground and try and get there first regardless. But then the amount of times we've seen defenders go to ground and they give away a penalty, and you go, oh, why did they go to ground? It is a difficult one. I think Socrates was the only one that maybe could have done anything about it. I've seen people on Twitter blaming Granit Xhaka, I think purely because his name's Granit Xhaka, because I don't know what the fuck he was supposed to do that's made it his fault.
I just want to remind me about that. I want to talk to you about something you said on last week's podcast about that. Go on, carry on, sorry.
Yeah, so I wouldn't so much say, look, it's Socrates' fault, it's a huge error. But it looked like he maybe could have done something about it, and I think he's the only one. I don't know, I just think it's one of them things. It could have been defended better, but he could have lunged in and they still scored. It's not like the tackle would have definitely been a goal-saving tackle. He could have done something different. I mean, what he'd done was essentially nothing, which is never going to work.
Don't you just feel that at the moment, everything we do, nothing is working? Everton, yeah, we were the better side against Everton. We didn't create much, but we had the more energy. We were better all round. Everton were terrible, weren't they? I mean, they didn't offer anything last week. And Bournemouth weren't much better until they scored, and then they had a little bit of action. But it just feels like whatever we do, we were in the ascendancy, we were playing well, everything was good, and we still go one goal down. It was horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I read yesterday that apart from the West Ham game, we haven't led in a Premier League game since November the 6th, I think it was someone said. I don't know if that's true. I just read it online yesterday.
That was me, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
there you go.
Well, we don't know if it's true or not, then.
It could be
Liam making things up, yeah. Not much to, you know, we score in the second half, we come back, nothing much to talk about at the goal, apart from Aubameyang still world class and he gets a half chance and he takes it. Is that fair, Liam?
Yeah, I'd say so. We it's like you were saying, it's just nothing was seeming to go for us, but the one time it did, Aubameyang was thankfully reacts quick enough to just sort of guide it bit into the goal. I want to praise Xhaka here, because we were saying earlier that Xhaka gets all sorts of stick because his name is Granit Xhaka. But he starts to move really well, but he bypasses both their attack and their midfield straight into Aubameyang, who's straight bearing down on their goal. And that's what starts to move. We get a bit of luck with the break of the ball. But I wanted to highlight that Xhaka actually made so many of those passes all game, and it worked.
Yeah, interesting, because we'll talk about we'll get on to talk about Xhaka, I'm sure. I mean, is there anything in the game that I've missed that you want to talk about before we get on to 3-2-1s?
I just want to know your opinions on. So there was one time, I think we were still 1-0 down. Maybe it was 1-0. Ozil from the right played a ball into Aubameyang, and Aubameyang took a touch, and then the move kind of fizzled out. I was convinced at the time he could have hit that first time, and it would have been a great chance. from on Match of the Day, they only showed it once and not from a great angle, and it still kind of looked like he could have took it first time. I don't know if TV showed a better angle, and any of you can sort of clear that up for me, if you even know what I'm talking about.
Not me, Liam. I don't know what he's talking about.
I think I might know the one, but I thought it was Lacazette, so I might be thinking of something different. I'm not sure I can fully remember.
It was in the second half. He was on the stretch, but it felt like he could have just hooked it in, whereas a touch was always going to take it away from goal, and then I don't think anything really came of it.
I did think, it was a very similar one where Ozil put it into Aubameyang and he took a touch and then curled it over the top right-hand corner. And I thought then, if he was really confident, he would have hit that first time. But he actually took a touch and it
that was at the start of the second half and right in front of me. Yeah. And he actually shaped to hit it first time and then thought better of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be honest, as he went to shape to hit it first time, I was thinking, don't hit it first time. And that's one name I saw. I actually read back through the WhatsApp group after the game and people saying, oh, it's close from Aubameyang. Again, just because of my angle, the moment he hit it, you knew it wasn't in. Yeah. Like, he's tried to get it up and down. And you think, if a free kick's on the edge of the area and you go, oh, you can't get it up and down in that space, you've got to try and do something else. But Aubameyang was in the area. So if you can't get it up and down from outside the area, chances are you ain't going to do it from inside. To be honest, I think it was the wrong way to go about it. And it may look half close, but the way he hit it, it's basically impossible to score.
Yeah, well, do you remember that goal he scored? I can't remember where it was now. He hit one first time from 23, 24 yards. It was outside the area. Bent one into the right-hand corner. Do you know the goal I'm talking about?
Tottenham.
Yeah, I think it was Tottenham. It was Tottenham, definitely Tottenham. And, you know, that's what I'm talking about. When he was full of confidence, hits that sort of shot first time, he's good enough. And I think that's sort of the issue with all our players at the moment. There's such a lack of confidence that we're taking two touches instead of one. And I thought that was something we did a lot better yesterday. We moved the ball so much quicker than we have done for the last 18 months, really. Is that right, Liam? Did you see it like that?
Yeah, I thought that was a difference, really, between today and the game at Everton. It would just sort of seem to move it that bit quicker. It was a bit more incisive. There was a bit more intent about it. Again, when I say the final ball, I'm thinking mostly of the wide crosses. I agree with Tony Ozil, had a really good game. But there was just this more intent about it. It was moving quicker. It was one touch instead of two or three touches.
Yeah. Should we move on to, and this is in Hilton again, should we do our 3-2-1s? We've been dancing around these players. I thought it was a bit easier this week to pick good players because we had some really good performances.
My 3-2-1 is easy. What the order of the 3-2? Well, the three players are easy. The order is a bit...
Well, that'd be interesting because I've got exactly the same. I think I've got... there was three obvious candidates. I just don't know which order we're going to put them in. Liam, let's start with you. Who do you... those of you who are new to the podcast, what we do at this stage is we rate the players. We basically give our top three performances, 3 points to the best, 2 points to the second, 1 point to the third. And then at the end of the season, that gives all of us as pundits our own player of the year and a collective player of the year from the Clock End Talk. So, Liam, who do you give your 3 points to this week?
My three's to Xhaka. I thought he put himself about the pitch. He broke up play really well. Didn't do anything dumb. Shouldn't be praising him for it, but he does sometimes do that, so got to praise him now. And I thought his line-breaking passes were really good all day long into Aubameyang, down the left to Saka. And it really created Bournemouth a few headaches and put them on the back foot. I thought it was really good today.
Yeah, good. Good points. What about you, Tony?
Xhaka for exactly the same reasons, and just another one to add that he covered at left back so Saka could go, which caused them untold problems because now they had Aubameyang and Saka both acting as left wingers and they didn't really know what to do about it.
Well, maybe this isn't so tough then, because I've got Xhaka at 3 points as well. I thought it was his best performance for the club for a long, long time. I thought he absolutely ran the midfield. He was solid. As you say, he stepped in at left back and he also stepped in at centre half when we had to make that substitution. His passing was quick, he was incisive, and he hardly gave the ball away all day. Xhaka, 9 points from us. Good. So, Liam, 2 points.
Oh, sorry, forgive me, I'm coughing, I've got a sore throat.
That's okay.
I think my two, I'll give to Torreira. Similar reasons to Xhaka. He broke up the play really nicely. He was putting himself about. He didn't, for his short frame, you'd think he was easily dominated, but he actually was the dominating one in midfield, I thought. Won the ball back more times than I could care to count. I thought overall he was really good. This was Torreira at his finest.
Yeah, fine comments again. Tony?
I'm going to go the other way around from Liam because I know his third is. I'm going to go Ozil just because I think every time we looked like doing anything attacking-wise, it came through him. He was finding space. He was doing what you want Ozil to do. He was finding space with ease, driving forward, actually running with the ball, running at the back line, committing defenders, and then finding passes out wide or into the strikers. You just felt like a goal was going to come from him, and obviously it didn't in the end, but every time he had the ball, you felt like something was going to happen.
Yes, yeah. I thought it was tough, but those three stand out. I've got Torreira, I think, just shading, as well, I'll say, 2 points for Torreira. Again, I haven't been his biggest fan this last 18 months. I think he fades out of games. I don't like the way he rolls around on the floor every time he gets touched. But he does know how to win a foul. He broke up play really well, and I thought it was his best game for a long, long time. So my two goes to Torreira. And as I mentioned there, my 1 point will go to Mesut Ozil. Or for all the things you said, Tony, I thought he was outstanding. And in normal weeks, that would have been the 3 points. But there was such good performances from Xhaka and Torreira. And what about you, Liam? What's your one?
Yeah, my one's to Ozil as well. Anything good went through Ozil. I wanted to note as well that when he was finding space, it wasn't just pockets of space, it was almost acres. He was really on it today. He looked like he wanted to win the game. And he worked really hard as well. It's not something we associate with Ozil, but he worked and run hard for the team, I thought.
Yeah. Tony, you're with Ozil. You're with Torreira then, are you, for your one?
Yeah, it's funny. After 20 minutes, my mate I was with, I said, I think Torreira touched the ball more times in them 20 minutes than he had in the rest of the season combined.
Yeah.
He still had a couple of shaky touches early on, but he grew into the game. So, yeah, it was Torreira. But I do want to say, he was just shy of my 3-2-1, but Luiz, I thought, had a really good game. He won so many balls in the air. His passing, there was some that was off, but some that were so incisive that you kind of saw where his value is when he strides into midfield. And for me, it was the kind of performance that makes Arteta still pick him. And again, he's another one for me. On a normal day, he'd comfortably be in our 3-2-1. I just thought the other three were very good. So he just misses out. But I think both defensively and offensively, he had a very good game.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, there's something that Arteta mentioned. I don't know if you heard his press conference after the game, Tony. I listened to it, just as we were getting ready for today's show. And he was asked about Ozil. And he said, you know, you've picked Ozil, and Ozil has had probably his best game for a couple of years for the club. And Arteta made the point. He said, I gave everyone a clean sheet. He said, a clean slate. He said, and that's everyone, and Ozil. And he said, from the moment I've walked in the gates of the training ground, Ozil has been incredibly professional and has worked incredibly hard from the first moment. Have we finally unlocked Mesut Ozil again?
Hopefully, but it's way too early to say. We've been burnt, not us, but football's been burnt with, say, at Man United, the amount of times Pogba's been unlocked and this manager's done it, and they've signed Matic to unlock Pogba, they've signed Herrera to unlock Pogba, and it's like, fucking, how many locks does this geezer have? And we're in the same situation with Ozil. So, look, he had a very good game. He's seemingly working hard and his attitude's been good. You've not unlocked him until he's consistent, because we've seen him have one-off good games so many times. It seems like whenever anyone's on the height of, he's going to go, this manager's not going to like him, Emery's bored of him, and then Emery rang him in for a game and he was unreal, and then he sort of meandered around the pitch for the next two or three. So we have seen this before, so I'm not now going to sit here and go, Ozil's back, it's Real Madrid Ozil, or the Ozil that got 19 assists in about 6 months for us before Giroud forgot how to score. But it's promising. It's as good as it can be after one game.
Yeah. Liam, anything to add to that?
Not particularly. I think Tony's hit the nail on the head. I hope he's back to his best and Arteta can keep getting the most out of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's early days. I've never been thought Ozil is one of those that his work rate is always fairly good. He's just not very good at tackling. And he's... Yesterday he was on it, wasn't he? Yesterday, every time he got the ball, he drove forward and he looked for that pass. Over the last, 18 months when he's been playing, and this is my criticism of him in big games, is he looks for the easy pass and he goes backwards. And I've called him, I think we argued about this a couple of weeks ago, Tone. I say he's a flat track bully and doesn't turn up in the big games. Well, yesterday it was Bournemouth and he ran the game. But with our next two games are Chelsea and Manchester United. That's the proof for me, is how he plays and how he performs in those two games. Is that not fair?
Look, I'm not going to judge his season on two games, but so I wouldn't say it's the proof. Of course, we want him to perform, but if he doesn't perform in the two games, there could be a list of so many different reasons that you can't go, oh, that's it, it's the same old Ozil. And to be honest, I don't expect him to play 90 minutes of both the games, because we've seen how little he's played, and he always tends to sort of get dragged off because he looks a bit tired. And we've got three games in 6 days, including yesterday. So I don't expect him to play all of them. And this is what there's a few things. One, as fans, we've got to accept that if he is trying to play these killer passes a lot, which he was yesterday, he is going to lose the ball at times. And we've got to not get on his back when he does give the ball away two or three times. Oh, he's lost the ball again. Because when you're trying to be incisive and play killer balls, occasionally you're playing the hard balls and they're hard for a reason. And the other thing we've got to not, if he gets dropped on whatever day, I've lost track of days, but when we play Chelsea, can't go, he's realised already that Arteta's realised that Ozil's not someone for him. It's three games in 6 days. People are going to be dropped, rested, suspended, whatever way. People ain't going to play all three games, or most players ain't. So it's hard to judge anyone on these three games. Fitness levels are going to be, there's always some really weird scores around this time of year because teams just go into the match completely unfit and can get completely rolled over. I think whatever it was, 7-3 against Newcastle, 7-2, whatever it was on Boxing Day or between Christmas and New Year. Liverpool beating us 5-1 was last year, was between Christmas and New Year. These are just very, very weird fixtures.
Just saying, I want to pull you, just go back to the podcast last week. I mean, Tez, I forgot, was how negative he was about Arteta. Wanted him, but he gave him three games to judge him. Something you mentioned on last week's podcast was who's to blame. It was a question in the question section, and the answers varied. And Sam was very good on the podcast as well, but the answers varied from Kroenke to Raul. Oh, that was it. Tez wanted Raul Sanieri sacked, didn't he? He was critical of that. People blame some of the players. But I thought no one criticised the fans. And what you mentioned earlier about Xhaka, people will slag off Xhaka because it's Xhaka. And that's absolutely right. I mean, I've been going to a lot of games this year, and that is it. I thought Xhaka was having an excellent game at Everton. He gives the ball away, and 20 people around me go, "Xhaka, you cunt!" And I think, what's going on?
Just to butt in, he doesn't usually have to do something wrong for people to moan about him. No. Like if he's, I'm not saying it's right, but if he's giving away the ball away, at least there's somewhat of a reason. There usually doesn't need to be a reason. Like, he passed the ball backwards when it was the really obvious ball and the safe ball and the ball that was on. Obviously, he's shit. That's what usually happens, and it happened a lot yesterday as well.
But my point is that, the fans have got to take some blame, I think, over the last 18 months. We've been so critical. No one wants to play for our club. Torreira don't like it. Aubameyang, Lacazette are frightened to sign new contracts. It's not a very nice place to play. The Emirates is a horrible place to play football. Everyone's so nervous. So I just wanted to mention that. I thought that the fans should take some criticism for the way they've been over the last 18 months. And I know it's a two-way street, and I know if the players play well, then the fans get behind them. But this is the most horrible atmosphere I've ever known at Arsenal, and I've been out for a long time.
I completely agree with you. Like, no one goes to more games than me, and I think our fan base is horrendous. I say it all the time.
Yeah, and it never was, Tony. It never was. There was always people moans. I've been going since the 70s, and people would go and moan then about, the players. It would still be a lot of criticism, and we weren't as good then. But the vile atmosphere now, we went there to the stadium to get rid of our anxiety, our angst, and cheer that team on. Whatever the score, whatever the weather. And it's just vile there now. Anything else you want to mention before we go on to the questions?
Yeah, just I want to bring up quickly, I don't know if you noticed, that this is not a negative, it's something I quite endorse. We completely abandoned pressing yesterday. We had absolutely no fucking interest in doing it. For me, that's fine. When you can't defend, don't try and win the ball high up. Just make sure it don't get in behind you. But I just thought it was interesting when people assume that Arteta's team would be high energy, trying to nick the ball as early as possible, a la Guardiola's teams, that like they had a goal kick and we got back into a very definitive 4-2-3-1. And Lacazette was stand basically on the edge of the area in line with a penalty spot. Their centre-backs would split wide, and Aubameyang and Nelson didn't split and try and get them. They just stayed exactly in shape. And it surprised me because, as I said, I expected, like I think most others did, that we would be high energy pressing from the front. And as I said, I endorse it. I like it. It just really surprised me.
Liam, did you notice that?
I can't say I did at the time, but I don't really mind it either because we don't have high energy runners to do the high energy pressing. So, yeah, I don't really mind it either.
I think it was the lack of coordination under Emery, wasn't it? Some players would be pressing and some would be coming back. There just seemed to be no idea at times. And I'm with Tony. I didn't particularly notice it yesterday, but we've all mentioned that two of our best players were Xhaka and Torreira, and in front of them, Ozil. The fact that those three in a triangle played so well yesterday, and maybe that's because we had some shape, we had some formation, it's good. Anything else, Tony? Liam, anything you want to bring up from yesterday?
Not that I can think of.
No, Tony? Well, in which case, Tony? Oh, look, 36 minutes. We're racing through today. Good. They'll be knocking on my door soon. Questions? There's quite a lot of questions this week, is there, I think? Did you say?
There's not as many as usual. People are still full of turkey and two-factor type, probably including me. I'm going to go with the ones on WhatsApp first, and then I'll go through the ones on Twitter after. We had a similar formation and team that Emery used many times, but we actually kept the ball and created many chances. What do you think Arteta has done to make us look better in just a few days? If you had to pick one person to go this window, who would it be? I'm assuming that means player. And this is from Sam, who was on the pod last week.
All right, okay. Liam, do you want to take that while I think about it?
Yeah, I'm having to think about it as well. I think the main thing is probably
I was going to say I'll jump in while you're still thinking about it if you want. The shape was completely different in terms of, and I said last week, I can really see Hector struggling to get back in this team because Arteta likes, as Guardiola does, his fullbacks to come in and be centre midfielders at times, and Maitland-Niles is much more suited to that. He's not as good a right back as Hector, I'm not saying he is, but for that system, and it was really interesting yesterday that when we had the ball, Maitland-Niles came into centre midfield, which made it a lot easier to play out from the back. Saka didn't, so they kept width on one side and narrow on the other to allow us to keep the ball. And that is such a small change. Like I said, the formation is still 4-2-3-1. I wouldn't say Ainsley was a centre midfielder, but it just made such a big difference to when we were playing. We had the extra man in midfield. It was really hard, as I said earlier, for them to mark Saka because you ordinarily don't mark a left back, but he essentially wasn't. He was playing like a left winger, especially when we was trying to play out. It was just, I think he developed a system or used a system that is just really hard to deal with.
Yeah, maybe you'd given him too much credit. I think the question said, what has Arteta done to make us look better? And look, I keep saying I'm positive. I'm the positive Arsenal fan, but I do want to play devil's advocate to a certain extent. We went behind again against Bournemouth. I didn't think created many good chances. We created many good positions, but our final ball was terrible and our finishing was terrible. So I didn't think there was that many chances. We were better because we showed more energy, but we were playing one of the worst teams in the Premier League, who have scored 6 goals, I think, in their last 11 games. So
they beat Chelsea two games ago.
I mean, but this is how freakish the Premier League is. Yeah, West Ham United won at Chelsea as well. Southampton won at Chelsea. Chelsea's home form is fucking terrible. But Bournemouth are in the bottom six, aren't they? They weren't a good team. They're worse than us. So did he actually do anything better, or was it just new manager bounce that gave us a little bit more energy?
I said, for me, I can pick a few systems, things that changed, and one of them, for me, the biggest one was Maitland-Niles playing central, like coming in central. And so for me, that is a big change. I don't think that's just a case of the players are running a bit more, because it was clear that I'd love to see his average position map yesterday. I usually don't care about shit like that, but he was so central. And the one thing, it did cause a problem on the counter a couple of times where he was central and the ball's gone over his head, and they had Josh King, who's absolutely rapid on that side. So it can cause you problems. Obviously, there's no foolproof system that works at all times. But I just thought it was a clear, clear change that he comes in, Saka pushes up really high, and it, as I said, it just is defend. It's something that teams are not used to defending against. And as I said, we know Guardiola done it in his first season. He struggled with it because he had fullbacks that couldn't control the ball when they went into the middle of the pitch. I think it was Clichy and Sanya maybe at the time.
Yeah.
And then that year he went and spent about £4 billion on fullbacks and won the league 2 years in a row.
To answer your question, Tony, I've just looked up the player influence pitch map for Arsenal yesterday. And it is kind of weird how we all seem to have found the same answers. Xhaka, Torreira, David Luiz and Maitland-Niles were the four most influential players on the pitch. Ozil's hardly mentioned, but Maitland-Niles, yeah, huge influence down that right-hand side. Yeah.
I think it also helped Torreira and Xhaka to look good because they had the extra man who was free to pass it to.
Yeah. More questions?
Oh, I didn't know if either of you were going to answer that question. No.
I sort of did.
No, one player that you would... So, where was it? I've skipped on. If you had to pick one person to go this window, who would it be?
Oh, that one. Well, I think you mentioned in last week's pod, Tony. Sorry if I'm jumping in, Liam. You mentioned in last week's pod, you know, Xhaka might go, and Arteta's now got 6-7 months to identify this side, and nothing's much is going to happen in January, but it gives him a good 6-7 months to plan for the next transfer window. And I think Rahul and Edu were also sort of mentioned that in their press conference they did earlier in the week. But I go back to what I said a couple of weeks back. What we've got to identify, I think you, Tony, you said that we've got players down to a year left on their contracts. I had a look at the contract situation of Aubameyang and Lacazette. I think they both signed in January 2 years ago. So this is the 4 years ago. This is the 2 year window now. If it gets
no
to
one
the end
signs
of the...
a contract till January, all contracts are signed to the end of the season.
No, well, I looked on Transfer Market, and that's what it's. That's where they've got them down as is.
And Lacazette didn't sign in the January, signed in the summer.
Well, I'm only going by what the transfer. Maybe he didn't sign that full contract. What I'm saying is that this is the window where you have got those players, some players, on 2 years. I'm sure Aubameyang was.
Aubameyang and Ozil were definitely a year and a half.
Liam, jump in. I'll just get out what I looked at earlier. Liam, jump in if you want to answer that question.
To answer the question, without trying to pick someone too obvious, you know, Mustafi because we don't rate him, or Xhaka because he wants to leave, I think Lacazette might be the one that I'd go to, not for the same reasons that Darren's alluding to, but I think he causes us a bit of a headache. He doesn't really look happy. He's not on form. He gets a bit sticks. He's not scoring. And it causes the headache of, do we play Alba through the middle or do we leave him out wide so Lacazette can get in the squad? I think if he is sold, I think it's a win-win for all parties. So Lacazette's probably one that I'd look to move on.
What about you, Tony? I mean, anyone for you you want to leave this year?
Although I'm not Lacazette's biggest fan, I don't think I'd lose him in January. I think the most obvious ones is looking at the squad players, but then you have to get someone else in. So it's all well and good saying Mustafi, but I'd rather Mustafi play than Mavropanos, if I'm completely honest. So then if you're getting rid of Mustafi, you have to replace him. Are we likely to do that? Who knows? The Xhaka one for me is worrying because I said last week I think he is such an Arteta player, and then yesterday he's had his really good game, as potentially his best game in a couple of years for us, but it looks like he's agreed a deal away from the club. I read a report last night, I can't remember who it was by, so I'm not going to credit them because I don't know who it was, that said Xhaka's told Arteta he wanted to go, and he asked him to, and Arteta's asked him to give him until the summer when everything's stable, and Xhaka's really unhappy about that. Again, that's completely unstablished, might not be true. So I think if anyone, it could be him, but I think it would be a big, big loss, and I know not many people would agree with me, but fuck him, it's my opinion.
Yeah,
And just got Transfer Market up. Aubameyang is 2021.
Yeah, so Aubameyang's the 18 months. So that's what I say. I think it was... so he's the one they've got to make a decision on in January for me. You know, that it's got to 18 months. They've been trying to him to get him to sign a contract. If he doesn't want to, his value at the moment is, what, 60, 70 million? He's getting on a bit, but... that's surely the him... If you look at that list of players, Tony... You know, there's a few there, isn't there? I mean, there's no one. There's him and Ozil. They're the ones that are getting down to that thing. You can't do much with Ozil, but can you let Aubameyang get down to 12 months left on his contract? Can you let that do it? Especially after you made a big point a year ago of saying we're not going to let players run their contracts down.
I just can't see that you can sell him in January, especially Lacazette don't look like he's going to score anytime soon, especially not away. Martinelli, as bright as he's looked, has one Premier League goal, and that you can't really, you're not going to rely on him every week until the end of the season. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if both Lacazette and Aubameyang go in the summer, but I definitely wouldn't let Aubameyang go in January. If the right offer came in for Lacazette, I don't think it's the best idea, but if the right offer came in, I would let him go in January. But Aubameyang, I don't think you can.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
No one else scores the goal he scores.
I mean, I tend to agree that, but do we write this season off and recruit the money, you know, recoup that money now, or do we get less for him in 6 months' time? We're unlikely to get into the top four. Is he going to make that much difference? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sell him. What about Xhaka? You know, I've mentioned a few times that I thought he'd lost his love for the club and there was too much of a fallout, and I thought he would leave in January. And now there's lots of reports of German clubs in Hertha Berlin, I think, that's going to happen in January. However, his performance yesterday and his performance last week under Lundberg, do you think that there's a way back in now for Xhaka?
Look, me and you have always had different opinions on this, in that I didn't think there was much of a problem in terms of him getting back in. And you was right in that it's not from the fans' point of view, it's from his point of view. Does he want to play for these fans? And it seems like, from what we're hearing, the answer is no. I would like to keep him. I think it'd be a bad bit of business, especially, I mean, the rumoured fees, 20 to 25 million is, I know he's got mistakes in him and he has games where we all hate him, to use a phrase, but I wouldn't entertain 20 to 25 million for him, to be honest. I would laugh it out. But then if he's forcing his way out and isn't happy here and doesn't want to play, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. Liam, any think on that?
Yeah, I just don't think you can let Xhaka go unless we're getting the replacement lined up. And if you get a replacement, you need the money to be able to do it. So, yeah, it's a tough one. Do you let him go for little money, or do we play hardball but potentially keep an unhappy player?
Yeah. Any more questions, Tony?
Yeah, Sushant says, what is Laka's problem in away games? Earlier it said that we don't create much, but Aubameyang has had no problem scoring away since his Premier League arrival. And yesterday we did create loads of chances. And I'm just going to add to this, and Lacazette didn't have a shot on target.
So Tony doesn't like Lacazette. What about you, Lee?
I'm on the fence with him. I want to like him, but at the end of the day he's not scoring goals, so I can't like him as much as I want to at this moment. I think there's a player there, but I think he's lost all confidence and all belief in his ability, and I don't see where he's going to score at the moment and where he's going to get that belief back.
Yeah, I disagree. I think he's a player that's the only one who's retained his confidence. He just seems like a confident man out there. I like the way he holds the ball up. I like the way links play, and I think we're a better side with him in it. He's not the quality up front as a goal scorer as Aubameyang, but I think he's a better centre-forward.
I thought it was interesting yesterday that we didn't actually use him to hold the ball up. I said this during the game to my mate. We didn't use him to hold the ball up and link play. His energy was very good yesterday. And look, as you said, I'm not his biggest fan, but I thought he ran really hard yesterday. And even after about 5 minutes, he sprinted. And I literally thought to myself, I can't remember the last time I saw him do that. It was just a basic sprint. And he was still working hard in the 90th minute. So I am going to give him some credit despite him missing chances. I just think you can't rely on him to score goals. And yesterday we didn't use him for the link up. So all the stuff he'd done well yesterday, if I'm honest, I think Martinelli would have done it better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue against Martinelli. I think he's certainly one for the future. But I thought he didn't hold the ball up so much, but he made lots of runs yesterday, which created the openings for others. You know, when Ozil's trying to find that pass, if you watch, that's what I thought was different yesterday. I'm not just singling out Lacazette, but Lacazette, Aubameyang, Nelson, they all were moving. They're all constantly running, which is why it opens up, and then Ozil's brilliant at that. And that's what I've seen. That was, I thought, the one thing was different. And call it a new manager bounce. Maybe they're all just trying a bit harder. But for the last, I don't know, 3 months, our forward line have been static, except maybe for Pepe, who will go and pick up the ball. And that's what was the difference was yesterday. Ozil had could run into space, and there was lots of movement, and he could pick out the ball. I thought that was the difference.
Yeah, I don't mind Lacazette playing in the side, but I think you've got to do it in a way that where Aubameyang still gets the number of goals he's getting when he's playing at centre forward. I think that's a difficulty. Like Firmino doesn't score so many goals. I know he scored two yesterday. He doesn't score so many goals for Liverpool, but nobody minds because he's doing all the dirty work. That means Mane and Salah can, or somebody else can get all the goals. I think if we could do that, I think he'd be loved a little bit more by the fans.
I just think the issue is, I think Aubameyang is going to get the similar amount of goals wherever the fuck you play him, because he's just someone that finds space in the area and regardless. I think the issue with playing Lacazette as a nine, especially yesterday where he stayed central, is that chances are going to fall to him. And people claim he's a great finisher. I've literally never seen any evidence of that in his Arsenal career. Okay. And that's the issue. We had two chances. Like, that chance, it's a great tackle by, I think, it's Steve Cook, or great block, whatever you want to call it. But Aubameyang scores that. He just scores it, and you know he does. And I think that's the issue with playing Lacazette at nine, that these big chances are going to fall to him just because of his position.
You say he's not a good goal scorer. He scores a lot of goals that Aubameyang wouldn't score, where he's forced his way through, where he's used
Where muscle. I disagree with you is the term a lot, because he doesn't score a lot of goals.
No, but my point was is that he's been dropped by Emery a lot. He wasn't, you know, first choice a lot of the time. Do you remember when he joined the club, or when we've got those two, we wanted those two to play together, and then we wanted those two to play with Pepe. And we were all, as fans and pundits, just thought that would work. And it sort of didn't. And Lacazette has been the one to drop out. And surely that affects you, you know, if you're not playing week in, week out. As a goal scorer, as a striker, you know, I remember Alan Shearer going back to the, was it 96 European Championships? And those of you who don't know Alan Shearer as a player, he was outstanding. Even included my Arsenal players, probably up there in the top two or three centre forwards I have ever seen play football. He went through a run before that Euro 96 where he couldn't buy a goal. He'd gone something like nine games for England without scoring. And the manager at the time said to him, Venables it was, said to him, I'm going to play you in every game. Just relax and do it. And he went on to become the tournament's leading goal scorer, I think. And I just think that's the problem with Lacazette, is that he's been in, out the side all the time. And that makes you snatch at chances because you're so desperate to score, to retain your place. And maybe under Arteta, he'll get more football.
I just don't think he's ever been a goal scorer since he's been at us. And I don't see anything to change that. You can look at his Leon days and say, hopefully they come back. But I don't think we've seen any. I think his top goal scoring season for us is 14. And he plays at nine. When he does play, it is nine. He doesn't play anywhere else. I think he's a good all-round player. I just think you can't. The ball goes through one-on-one in the last minute. I don't trust him. I don't think goal. You're right. He does score goals where he hustles and bustles through defenders that Aubameyang wouldn't. But he gets three goals a year that Aubameyang wouldn't. Aubameyang gets 15 goals a year that Lacazette wouldn't. And that's just where it sits for me. On to the next question. Sushant again. What will be a realistic good return from kids like Saka, Nelson, Willock, Martinelli in the Premier League alone? Is four goals and seven assists, or is that too much of an expectation? It says 4 to 7, so I don't know if that means combined or each. I think it means combined.
Liam, have you got something ready with that? Or
no, I think it's a bit difficult to. You have to take it player by player, I think, because Willock's a central midfielder and we've got an abundance of central midfielders, so how much game time is he going to get? Saka at the moment's playing left back, so each game he does that passes by, he's not realistically going to score or get many assists. Nelson, how much game time is he going to get? And the same, Martinelli will probably get more than them because he gets more chances as the number nine. I'd like to think 4 to 7 in the Premier League's a decent return. I'd like to imagine that someone like Martinelli will get that. Perhaps Nelson, Saka, if he plays enough at left wing. Willock, I'm not so sure about. It's a difficult one, really.
I mean, looking at yesterday, I thought, you know, Saka's playing out of position and played really, really well as a left back and played pretty poorly as a left winger. Nelson, what you've got to like about him is he's got the confidence to demand the ball, which is great. You know, when I've had years of watching people like Walcott, Hyde, He's not like that. He wants the ball, but his decision-making, his final ball, is just poor. Those things may come in time or they may not, but they don't look. They were the weak links for me yesterday. They were the weak players. You don't see that with Martinelli or Guendouzi for me. They're players who look like the future.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if they get the minutes, they should all be achieving 4-7. I mean, it's not unrealistic to say Saka and Nelson, and despite Nelson playing wide and Saka playing left-back, could have had two assists or two goals or a combination yesterday. Their just final ball was so bad. So even with short amount of minutes, and then, you know, as I said, with Aubameyang, you can get the ball into the area and you've got half a chance of it going in. Willock always gets in great positions. So again, the numbers, if he gets the minutes, should be there. I mean, to be honest, I don't know, quite know how he hasn't scored a Premier League goal yet, because he's played a lot of games and he's played very well in some games and he gets in the positions. He just misses some chances. And I think there was one against Brighton, a header, and you're like, how have you missed that? Not even that, just how? Like, what have you done there? So I think them numbers should be available to all of them, but they've got to start doing it. And of course, they have to get the minutes to be able to. Next question, last one from Shasan. What improvement would you like to see in Maitland-Niles, Willock and Guendouzi by the end of the season to measure their progress / growth?
Well, Maitland-Niles, you say he played very well yesterday and maybe will play well under Arteta. But he's not, for me, first choice. I think he's lost that. I think Bellerin will come back if Bellerin discovers that form. The one for me that I want to talk about is Guendouzi. Subsequent managers haven't played him, and I think it's quite good for him to get out of the firing line. But I want him to play. I love him, and I miss that energy. Liam?
I'd quite like Guendouzi to have a bit of a USP, because I still don't really know what he's about. We know he's great and that he's got the technical ability and he runs hard and he drives, but he's not really a playmaker. He doesn't get many assists. He's not a goal-scoring midfielder, but neither is he a defensive like Torreira is. I'd quite like to see him get some kind of USP, something that's niche about him that he's good at, and sort of hone in on that. That's what I'd like to see from him.
Yeah, for me, look, I've advocated dropping him for a while, and one of his strengths, as Darren mentioned, is energy. But if he's playing in them too deep, and as I said yesterday, we sat in a very defined 4-2-3-1, especially when defending, and energy kind of becomes redundant. Like, we always moan at Xhaka for not being quick enough or athletic enough, but at no point yesterday was there a time we go, oh, I wish Xhaka was quicker there. It's just when you're in a defined role, you don't need to be able to run up and down. And I think that's a problem. And as Liam said, he's just got no... He's got nothing where you go, oh, he has to play in that position because he does this. I don't know if, for me, the way he could get best into this team is to try and take Willock's role, because he's got the energy. As in, like, Willock come on yesterday, but it's just because Willock's seen as someone that can get goals and Guendouzi is seen as someone that can't. But if he works on that skill, he is much better than Willock. He can pass the ball better, he keeps the ball better. So there's a role for him there, but beyond that, I kind of think he struggles. I've said that for a while.
Okay. More questions?
Yeah, sorry, I've just got to open Twitter because that's it from WhatsApp.
15 minutes to go.
We've got some Fergie time as well. MAA Gunner, great performance, but our strikers let us down. If Martinelli is fit, would you rather see him play against Chelsea? And who makes way, if so?
Nelson. Yes, and Nelson.
For me, Nelson and Lacazette for Pepe and for Martinelli.
Yeah, I'm the same as Tony. I also don't think our strikers let us down, to be perfectly honest. I thought Lacazette played all right. It was one really good tackle by Steve Cook, but I wouldn't see him in place of a striker. I'd see him in place of a wide player.
Yeah. But then for me, that moves Aubameyang central. So
true.
MAA Gunner again, comparing this to Emery's first game, we showed much more positive and clear signs of control and attack. For a bit, Bournemouth couldn't get out of their half, which we've been guilty of throughout the season. One thing though, why did Ozil come off? He was... It says if he was our best player, but I'm presuming he thinks he was our best player.
Well, he was one of our best players. We all agree on that. But don't you think that he came off because he's hardly played this year and he's knackered? I don't think he's worked as hard. He made lots of runs. And I think it was an eye on, as you said, Tony, we've got 3 games in 6 days. If he's going to play that well, then, you know, it sort of reached his peak, I thought. I thought he was on the fade.
Yeah, I mean, coming from, we saw Willock like running back to the dugout and getting changed, and pretty much everyone around me went Ozil. I wouldn't say particularly looked tired. It was just as soon as you saw Willock, you kind of half knew what was happening.
But Liam, didn't you think? I thought it was beginning to fade. Again, I've got this Brazilian girl staying with us at the moment, and she's mad about her football. Flamenco fan. We went to watch the Liverpool Flamenco game at a pub in Liverpool after the Everton game. And she was, well, and she's Brazilian, so she hates Mesut Ozil because he's German and they beat him by 7 in the World Cup. So she was looking at him from the start, and she only watched the second half. She's going, look how shit Ozil is, look how terrible he is. And I'm sort of laughing at myself, thinking she could be an Arsenal fan, you know, she's critical, a picky. But I thought, you know, I watched him very deep, because she kept going on about it, I thought he had an excellent first half and he was starting to fade. So I thought it was the right decision.
Yeah, I put it down to fitness more than anything. Again, without wanting to sound like a broken record, we've got 3 games in 6 days coming up. I didn't see it as anything more than a fitness thing. Get Willock on, he's got energy. Didn't see it as anything more than that.
No.
Fantasy Pre or FPL Canada, we're not finishing top 4 or bottom 3. Is it acceptable to use the rest of the season for Arteta to accurately assess the players and know exactly who to buy as soon as the summer window opens?
Very easy, yes. Yes, but I think from what Arteta has said, and it makes sense, that he wants to win. Winning's what football's about. You know, to get the fans back on side, we need to win. To get the players' confidence up, we need to win. And the league is so strange this year. You know, Chelsea just lost their 3rd consecutive home game. West Ham, Southampton, Bournemouth. If you can put a run together, let's say that we could still finish in that 4th spot. We really could. Leicester City yesterday got absolutely battered by Liverpool. You know, Leicester, who looks so good, have now lost to Manchester City and Liverpool and look a bit tired. I think Tony mentioned it in last week's podcast. You know, they don't have the squad. If they lose a couple of players, they could find themselves on a losing run. So I think, yes, absolutely, we can use the rest of the season to plan and prepare, because that's what he's got to do. But let's not write it off, because I think he'll want us to start winning games.
I agree. I think it's a delicate balance between finding out what's best and what doesn't work. But also, you have to win games. If he comes 17th and we just about stay up, we're not going to go into the summer thinking, oh, at least he knows the squad now. Or even if he finishes, to be honest, where are we now? 11th. If he finishes 11th, people will be disappointed. So you've got to find the balance between, yes, learning for the future, but you also have to win now. Like, football is a results-based business. And if his results are bad, he's going to get the criticism, especially with the lack of experience. So people are going to say, oh, why did we appoint him? His lack of experience. It's all well and good saying it now. And I agree that this is an assessment period. But all the criticisms will come out if in that assessment period we don't seem to be showing any improvement.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add to that. I think we play Chelsea twice in January. We've got the one on New Year's coming up, but I think we play them like 3 weeks later in the league. If we win both of those games, we cut down the top 4 to 2 points. It's definitely not out of the reach yet. So I'd be looking and still saying I want to reach the top 4 more than I want to assess the players he's got, and he'll do that anyway as we play the games.
Yeah, Chelsea's vital. Really, really vital.
Yeah, but it's annoying. You kind of wish the fixture was switched after watching how they played at whatever Tottenham called their swamp now and how they've been playing at home.
Yeah, I had a mate who's a Chelsea fan come around for a beer last night, and he was, you know, he's watches a lot of football of Chelsea, and he says they're not playing badly at home, but they just can't get it right. But away from home, it just seems to be clicking.
Well, they can't break teams down. We saw it for years, and teams come and play them. I mean, they were excellent against Tottenham. They were really good.
It was a great day, wasn't it? It was a great, great match to watch. Watching Mourinho get upset. Watching their goalkeeper do karate kicks, give away penalties. Honestly, watching Son, who's the gentlest man out there, do something stupid and get sent off. It was fun. I know we probably should have wanted a draw in that game, but I just enjoyed watching Chelsea win.
Always like that, isn't it? What you need and what's funny are very different. FPL Canada again. Aston Villa are probably going down, and Jack Grealish will be looking to move on if they do. I see him as a Jack Wilshere type replacement. Thoughts? I'm going to kick off on this. I really, really like Jack Grealish. I don't see him as a Wilshere type replacement. I think he plays too high up for that. He's one of them players, because I rate him so much, I'd say I'd love to see him at Arsenal. Where he fits in is a bit of a different question, potentially on a sort of left wing, but I'm not saying wide, stay left wing, cutting in and drifting. I don't know if Villa will go down. I'd imagine they will sell him regardless whether they go down or stay up, because everyone will be interested in him. He's basically playing in the team on his own at the moment, and they're just about keeping their head above water. So I think regardless of what happens, he goes. I would love for it to be us to try and sign him, but I think it'll be astronomical money, or money that we won't have any interest in spending. I mean, for me, I'm a huge James Morrison fan, Madison fan, but I think Grealish is better. And I think you're looking at 60 plus for either of them, and that's an absolute minimum.
Yeah, it comes with that English premium tax on him, doesn't he? So you're going to have to spend a lot of money to get him. I think he's a good player. I see him being in a 4-3-3 where you've got the single pivot rather than the two that we have. So I'm not sure where he fits either. Maybe if Ozil leaves, he replaces Ozil a bit. But yeah, I don't see us getting him.
It's funny, isn't it? I agree with Tony. I really like him. Always really liked him. He's the sort of, you know, that player that we've just been missing. You know, we thought Torreira could be that sort of player. You know, he's like a Ramsey as well, scores goals, goes box to box. He's sort of an improvement on Torreira, on Xhaka, on Guendouzi. But two things, I'm not sure he will leave Villa. I know that's in this day and age, it's all about money, but he's had lots of opportunities to leave them. He's offers to go to Tottenham in the summer.
Well, he accepted. Tottenham didn't match the price.
Yeah.
He
accepted. Do you know, he's just signed a new contract there, isn't he?
Which, for me, that just means bigger transfer fee. That's literally all I see when anyone signs a new contract.
Yeah, I know. It's just that he is of that very, you know, narrow band of players that is an Aston Villa supporter. You know, it will probably happen if they go down. But, you know, I don't think it's nailed on that he'll leave. Matt Letizia, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, Grealish agreed a move away. It's just Tottenham didn't match the valuation. I said I'll be amazed if he's there either way. But look, there's no way we can know if I'm right or whatever. It's just my thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, Hakon Larsson. Wasn't able to see the game. Saw some stats about possession and shots after the game, and those stats looked positive. Did you guys notice a change regarding build-up play and how we kept the ball?
I think we've covered this a little bit as we've talked about the game, if I'm honest.
Okay, next question from Hakon Larsson.
Sorry, I would just say to Hakon, don't bother watching it though. Is that fair?
I don't know, because I really enjoyed it being there. I don't know if it's like the Everton game where, as you said, I enjoyed it, you enjoyed it, everyone on TV didn't, so I don't know if it's that type of thing. Another question from Hakon: how much would you accept for Xhaka this January? And what kind of player or who do you want to replace him?
Well, we've just done that as well, haven't we? 30 million Grealish.
Well, I don't know about what value you'd accept for him and the name of a player, especially in January. I wouldn't take Grealish to replace Xhaka as much as I'm a Grealish fan. I think he needs to be higher up the pitch, which is why I said I don't see him as a Wilshere type replacement. But the money, I said that I wouldn't take 20 for him or 25. I'd be looking 40 plus, and you probably wouldn't get that. But then this is coming from someone that doesn't want him sold. So,
yeah.
Any values from you guys?
Get what we can. You know, I mean, if I'd like him to stay, I really would like him to stay. I think he's not been the best player we've had over the last 2 years, but he certainly hasn't deserved the criticism that we've levelled at him. There's been a fallout. I don't think there's a way back, but I noticed there was a lot, you know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I think some of the fan base are trying very hard to get him back on side. And his performances in the last 2 weeks give me hope that he's not just putting himself in the transfer window, putting him in out there, you know, putting himself in the shopping window so people can see him. I'm hoping he's actually just enjoying his football again.
Liam, have you got a name to replace him?
The name would be Thomas Partey from Atletico Madrid, but it's not a realistic one either.
Yeah, I mean, again, if we're going to go unrealistic, mine would be Ndidi, but same thing, it's not going to happen. Next question again, Hakon. Which of the players do you feel will struggle under Arteta? Anyone?
It's one of those questions that we think we're second guessing so much. We're second guessing that Arteta is going to be this disciplinarian that we think he sort of set out to be. In which case, then you look at players like, I don't know, Kolasinac and Ozil and people that have fallen out with managers in the past. David Luiz, you know, if there's a strong will in the dressing room and you've got a strong manager. But it's I think there's too much second guessing of what's going on and what his style is going to be like.
Anything, Liam?
No, I can't think of any player in the squad that much. I could see plenty of benefits for a lot of players, but I can't think of anyone who might potentially struggle.
See, pre-yesterday, I would have said Kolasinac because he doesn't, when he comes into the, he's not good enough on the ball to come in and be an auxiliary centre midfielder. However, the way we worked it yesterday with one coming in and the other keeping the whip high and wide, he can do that job and get in behind and put crosses in. So I think yesterday's kind of put me in the same boat as Liam, but I wasn't at 2:59 yesterday.
Okay.
So I've learned a bit in one game, but I could learn something completely different over the next week.
I think he's going to like Xhaka as well, isn't he? Because, you know,
I think Xhaka's the perfect player for him. And I said this before the game, like I said this last week on the podcast, which is why I think it'd be a real shame if the reports are true.
Yeah.
I mean, Didn't he say you wanted him at Man City? Sorry, it's Button.
I don't know.
I think I saw that somewhere. But anyway.
I mean, he's Arteta as a player wasn't anything exceptional in my mind. You know, he was almost that Gilberto, Arteta, Jackie. Until they're not there, you don't miss them. You know, they link everything up. They have more passes per game than anyone. And Arteta was never spectacular, scored the odd goals, made the odd incredible incisive pass. But he was a link man. And I think he would see in Xhaka the same sort of player, quite tough, quite hard, quite a good mentality, quite a good captain.
Well, I was just going to say Arteta was also a better captain than he was player. And I often say I think Xhaka is as well.
Yeah. This is like the Xhaka loving club today, isn't it? What's going on?
Happy. As a fan base, we're happy to absolutely hammer him when he's been bad. So... this doesn't ring true with Arsenal fans. I always think you should be balanced when he's been good, praise him, anyone. Totally. And when he's been bad, if you're going to let him know. But with Arsenal fans, it seems to be when he's been bad, abuse him. When he's been good, abuse him. When he's been excellent, abuse him anyway.
Tony, and you, it's one of the rare things we absolutely normally see eye to eye on is, you know, they're not when a player plays well, it's not the best, they're not the best in the world, and when they're bad, they're not the worst in the world. You know, Xhaka gets that criticism however he plays, but when he's been bad, he's not been terrible, and when he's been great, he's not been the best. You know, there's a little bit of balance is needed with Xhaka.
With everyone. Halls of Marble... Is it me or does Stein Kroenke look old enough to have met Abe Lincoln in person? Bit of background, Halls of Marble really doesn't like Stein Kroenke.
Well, Stein Kroenke looks weird, doesn't he? Can I say that? It's an Arsenal podcast. He looks like he doesn't talk to people, silence down. He just looks a bit weird. He's of a different generation to most of us, and he's obviously very wealthy and he's a bit strange. But he doesn't really have much to do with our club anymore, and I think we should concentrate on Josh.
Yeah,
Liam. I agree. I actually quite like Josh as well. When now you mention him, but I think Stan's probably the most well-groomed but obviously old bloke I think I've ever seen in my life.
Give me a few billion, I'd look good as well.
Fair point.
I'm not going to try and pronounce this guy's name. I think it's the one Tez struggled with last week. Annie Rudder. Sorry if that's wrong. Your fault. Isn't it high time we realise Laka and Uber cannot play together in the current system of 4-2-3-1? Absolutely no point in having Aubameyang on the wing. From my point of view, I think the way we played it yesterday didn't work too badly because Saka was high and wide and Aubameyang could cut in. And as I said, Aubameyang's going to score goals wherever the fuck you play him. I usually would agree with the point. I just don't think yesterday was an example of that.
No, we've covered it already, haven't we? I mean, I think in an ideal world... they're not going to play both. We thought it would be great, but it's never really worked out too well, has it? But I think it's a great replacement to have, and we have a lot of games of football. You know?
Yeah. Halls of Marble again. It was only Arteta's first game, literally his first managerial game ever. Is some of the angst towards him online regarding the team selection warranted?
No.
Certainly,
someone else has replied... No negativity required whatsoever for his first time in charge. He's done wonders with the same set of players. Martinelli out, Bellerin out, Tierney out, Holding out, players wanting out. His work on the training pitch has been fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's too much praise now, okay? It was one game we drew away at Bournemouth.
Annie Rudder again. Wasn't the Pepe substitution a bit too late? He should have come on in the 60th minute or so, as Nelson was poor and wasteful.
Yes.
30 minutes of Pepe would have certainly won us the game. Your thoughts?
Half time.
I was sitting there at half time saying that I would make the change then. I did think Nelson improved a little bit in the second half, but the sub was too late for me. I mean, I think in 79 minutes it came on.
Yeah. I didn't understand. I honestly rushed in to watch the game yesterday. I'd been down a pub as usual, and I rushed in to watch it, so I didn't even see the team news until, you know, they were lining up when I got it on the television. And I just took it for granted that Pepe was injured. It wasn't until I saw him on the bench, I thought, fuck, why isn't he playing? And when Nelson had been so wasteful with his final ball, I thought it was a half-time substitution.
Yeah. Liam?
Yeah, I think Pepe just brings a bit more cutting edge. And I thought after the first half that he'd bring him on at half-time. And when it got to the hour mark, I was thinking, he's still not coming on. When is he going to come on? I think he just would have brought that cutting edge and might have won us the game. I agree.
If it had been Unai Emery, everyone would have been up in arms.
Maybe, probably. I mean, but saying that, Emery would have tried to make four subs at half-time. So. Anthony Jourdain, well done to Arteta for keeping faith with Nelson in the second half. If it was me, he would have been off at half-time. But in the end, got an assist. Key pass by Ozil. What's going on with Pepe? I mean, I think we pretty much answered that, but it's just coming in from a different side. And then the last few questions are about Xhaka. Gunnar J, these are all from him. Xhaka looks like he's gone. Can you trust our board to adequately replace him?
Well, I think we've talked about that one quite a lot, haven't we? We've talked about how much we're going to get for him, whether he's going to go, whether we want him to go. I think we'd have to face facts that if he does go, no, he won't be adequately replaced in January because there's very few players of the quality that we need that are available. It would be a matter of, you know, somebody, Guendouzi, Willock, stepping up and filling in that position.
Yeah, I think I could trust the board to get somebody as good as they could get, but A, January, like you say, Darren, but also B, what funds do we have to get a player with?
I hear Dennis Suarez is available. I'm joking.
Well, he probably is. Remember as well, it's funny how he's fallen out of all of our mindset, but do you remember that Danny Ceballos we've got playing for us? You know,
He's someone that I think is a huge Arteta player. I said this to my mate yesterday at the game. I think Ceballos is someone that will suit an Arteta style. But then I looked at how rigid we were yesterday and thought, where the fuck does he fit into this team?
I think he might fit in where Ozil is. You know, I mean, Ozil might be the one who ends up leaving the club.
Yeah, I think he comes too deep and then it leaves a big gap between defence and attack. As I say, it's weird because the way he plays, I think, has Arteta written all over it. I just don't know where he does it within that team. I think the most likely one is Xhaka's position, but he's not. He'd do it differently. He'd play that position in a different way.
I mean, we've got to face facts as well. We had so many players really out yesterday. Bellerin, Chambers, Holding, Tierney, Kolasinac. There's a lot of players that weren't available yesterday. Martinelli, you know, there's a lot. We don't know what Arteta's going to do. We really don't, do we? No Ceballos yesterday. It's we could have almost picked that team yesterday because of who was available.
Yeah, as I said, I said that at the lineup. I thought that he picked the team that he could pick, barring Pepe. Gunnar J goes on about Xhaka some more. I know we've said we can't blame him for wanting to leave, but there's also a need to differentiate between fans in the stadium and fans on social media. What he received in the stadium booing isn't great, but shouldn't be considered abuse, and his reaction to it wasn't right. But in his response, he has clearly included vile abuse he received on social media, which, although totally unacceptable, is a reflection of the sad state social media is. People shouldn't take social media as a representative of the actual fan base.
I mean, that's a really well-written and well-thought-out argument. The one thing I would say is that attending quite a lot of matches, not in Tony's league by any means, but all the home games and some of the away games, it is in the crowd. Xhaka has only got to touch the ball and the word cunt is shouted out quite frequently. You know, he does get it from inside. I can see that social media is worse, but it's not good in the ground.
Yeah, I agree. As I said, it's, even if he plays the right ball, if he plays forward and loses it because there's no option, he's a cunt. If he plays backwards or sideways because it's the safe option and the sensible and the ball that should be played, he's a cunt for not going forward. Literally, people are just waiting for a reason. Well, they don't need a reason. They're just waiting to call him shit. But as I said, and I'm all not all for it, but I don't mind calling someone shit when he's lunged in on someone stupidly and given away a penalty. Fair enough. Flip and go, oh, fucking he's shit. But it's just so unbalanced with him. It's ridiculous. And it happens at times at other players. I think this is the worst I've seen it for anyone for a prolonged period. Like Ozil's had it before, Ramsey had it before, Alexis had it before, Mustafi's had it before. But with Xhaka, it's just been for so long, and it doesn't particularly need to be a reason. On to the last... Well, it's not even a question. This is such a terrible way to finish. In response to our question, Fred, someone has said, shite... #Arteta out.
No, that's all right. I don't mind finishing like that because that's sort of where we are as fans, isn't it? Arsenal fans, this is where we've got to be supporters. Get behind those players. Get behind Xhaka. Get behind Arteta. It's a lot more fun. It's a lot more fun being positive. I know I keep saying that, but it is. You know, and the great thing with football is there's a game every 3-4 days. So you can have a miserable fucking time and then you can look forward to it again. We're playing two big games, Chelsea, Man United coming up. Can't wait. Absolutely.
Also, just like I forgot to mention earlier, I'm all for Arteta dressing like he might mug someone on the way out of the stadium. Big fan of that.
It was a good look, I thought.
Freddie got criticised for not wearing a suit, and I hope if anyone criticises Arteta, I hope he tells him to go fuck himself. It just looked right, like him running up and down the touchline. There was at times it was genuinely confusing. It seemed like he was chasing their fullback down the wing.
Yeah, did like it. Did like that look. He did look like a James Bond climbing through the sewers somewhere, didn't he? Anything else we got, lads? Anything else we want to bring up?
Not that I can think of.
Good, because I've got another Christmas party to go to. Some more beer to drink, some food to cook. What are you guys doing later today, yeah?
Nothing.
I'm looking for work, because I'm going to be out of the job in 2 months. So, fun.
Oh, cheery, Anne. So we've ended with a question of Arteta shit and you being unemployed.
Yeah,
wonderful, isn't it?
Well,
this podcast is not a paid role.
I'm aware.
Well, not yet. When it becomes top billing, yeah, mate, who knows, Tony? Who knows?
Get on to Tez.
Yeah. All right, well, look, let's call it a day then. We've got a big, big, big week coming up. Chelsea, Manchester United, back-to-back home games. I've never been a big fan of predictions, but let's put it the other way. Do you realistically think we can come away from those games with, well... Let me ask you, Tony, how many points are we going to get after those two games?
I would like a minimum of 4. I wouldn't be entirely displeased with 3. I think if we only come away with 1 or 0, it's not anything where you go, I'm not going to go Tez and go, oh, it means he hasn't won in his first 3 games and you sack him. But I would like, especially, that I think the atmosphere is going to be good against, well, he should be good against both, but with Chelsea it being his first home game, I would like at least 4, to be honest.
Okay. Liam?
Yeah, I want 4, but what I want and what we might get are 2 very different things. I wanted 3 against Bournemouth. I wanted 3 against a lot of teams this season. I don't know.
See, this is how far we've dropped, you negative pair of twats. You both said you want 4. Why don't we want 6? Come on, 2 home games.
But I want these 4. I want 7.
Come on. I mean,
10 or 99 if I'm looking for 8.
The thing that we have to take into consideration is Chelsea are really good away from home, rubbish at home, and Manchester United are really good against the bigger sides and rubbish against the rest. So, yeah
but we're 11th, so hopefully they fall into their form how they play against Norwich.
Exactly. There you are. There's the positive end to the podcast. We are 11th, so we're a shit side, so we should beat Manchester United. And on that note, we'll talk to you all next week.